I'm Mike Vardy, and this is the Productivityist Podcast. This is the Productivityist Podcast. I am your host, Mike Vardy, and this week on the show, we have Marina Darlow with me. We had a great conversation talking about to-do lists, productivity, the kind of stuff that she does. She really helps people with their, you know, their visions, she goes through all the tools, gives people, their entrepreneurs, the tools that they need and support to build a thriving business. And we had a chance to chat and kind of dive into some of the things that she goes over with her clients and on her website, including some of the things that you can do to, you know, if you're struggling with the items on your to-do list, things that you don't like doing here. She's got some strategies and as to how to make those things happen, even when you don't really want them to. She also dives into some of the elements of decision-making, things like that. Again, we dive into the idea of when you get stuck. And there's so many other things that we dive into during this episode. It's, we got a half hour, and I just want to dive into it with Marina Darlow here on the Productivities Podcast. So check it out. Here we go. I'd like to welcome Marina Darlow to the Productivityist Podcast. Marina, thanks for joining me this week.
Thank you for having me. It's awesome.
So, we've had a chance to, have exchanges on Twitter and such, and you are this is what I love, because most of the people who've listened to the show have heard me talk about systems versus goals, the whole Scott Adams mantra about a systems mindset over a goals mindset. I'll link to that in the show notes for anybody who doesn't know what I'm talking about. But you are a systems expert and a productivity geek. You describe yourself as that. Can you give me an example of how those two things, you find those two things intersect? Because if you have got a real love for productivity and you geek out about it, how do you marry that idea of being a systems expert with productivity? Like, how do they go hand in hand for you?
It's weird that you ask, because for me, systems are at the core of productivity. And I probably should define systems the way I view them.
Go for it.
So it makes the connection clearer. A system is a process that you follow for the stuff that you do either repeatedly or stuff that you're kind of reluctant doing. Which means, if you have a system for it, and you don't need to struggle with the task or the process every single time, you free up brain space to create. You free up time. You free up energy and money, of course, because they usually go hand in hand, which means you're more productive. And since we're in the definitions realm, productivity is not just, making 300 widgets in an hour instead of 200 widgets in an hour. We're kind of past that point. But it's making sure that stuff that really matters most to you is getting done. And by matters most, also, clearly these are the big things and the big goals, but sometimes it's just the stuff that's most urgent and absolutely has to be done by a deadline. Having a system in place really, really helps you, get both the important and the urgent stuff done. So neither of them frustrates you.
Yeah, gotcha. Now I want to talk about you being a systems expert. What makes a system a good system? Because, there are a lot of different, and let's even go deeper with that. A good system for an individual, because I think a lot of people, what they'll do is they'll adopt a system that someone else is using and it isn't a good fit for them. So what makes a system a good person for an individual or for even for an organization, if you want to go to that direction?
So first and foremost, every individual processes information differently. And I mostly work with entrepreneurs. So when I talk about what makes a system a good system, the people in my mind that I kind of do it for are the very people who struggle with systems in the first place. These are usually the visionaries, and these are the big creators, the big picture people, which are also really great immediate responders. But they very often struggle with the in-between. And these are the people that making system work is especially important to, for both, because their visions are usually grander. So we as a society would benefit more from them executing on these visions. And also because these are the people that struggle most. So for the entrepreneurial, for the frenzy, for actually initially devised that kind of rules that make a system a good system for ADHDers. But I found out that it works for most of us. Here are the five rules that I believe make a system work. First, it has to be easy to use. What does it mean, easy to use? Most of the systems that we use have to do with information. So easy to use means easy to enter information. You know, if, for example, one click on Pinterest to save, or one button to speak or to schedule something makes it easy to enter information. The system has to make it easy to find information and easy to understand what the heck you found. So for example, if I have a wonderful spreadsheet with a macro and I put in a query and it spits at me a wall of numbers, and I'm really not very much of a numbers person. I'm very visual, let's say. Mm-hmm. This system is not easy for me to use. I don't understand the output.
That makes total sense. That makes it because everybody, like you said earlier, everybody parses information out in their own way. Some people are going to be really great with that kind of stuff, and some people are just going to not be able to grasp that. So that easy is, again, it's very personal, right?
Yeah, yeah. The principles apply. Easy to enter, easy to find, easy to understand. Mm-hmm. But what makes it easy for you specifically differs from person to person.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. Right.
And the second rule, or rule of thumb, so to speak, everything you can, put it on reminders. I first discovered it with my first iPhone a number of years ago when my then 3-year-old operated a smartphone better than I did. And if I go, let's say, of course, now I'm blanking an example, but basically, if I put a button on my phone, mm-hmm, on my way to pick my daughter from school and I say, remind me to pick up laundry when I'm home.
Right.
I don't need to think about that laundry anymore. It also works really well if I have an idea and I press the same button on my phone and I say, remind me to write up the blog post about the cyclical nature of creativity.
Right.
Because I have this idea, but I can't do it right now. I want to put it, you know, outside my head in a system. Reminders also work for stuff like meetings, so you don't forget things, not just for, you know, remind me later to do something.
Right. Time specific stuff as opposed to remind me in 2 weeks about writing this thing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And there are important things about reminders. First, they should not interrupt a natural flow of things. So, for example, if I decided to go on a morning run and a reminder about that said blog post beeps at me, it won't be really helpful. I won't write it up. I might forget about it by the end of the run. So it makes sense that this reminder beeps at me when I'm in my writing time block anyways.
Right.
And the next thing, that reminders need to be hard to ignore. This is especially true for ADHDers because they tend to ignore reminders. So you have all kinds of apps that either make them gentle and pleasant so people enjoy giving attention to these reminders, or you make them really, really annoying so you can't ignore them. Like that alarm clock that would only stop screaming at you if you solve a mathematical problem.
Well,
that's
right.
An extreme example.
No, I've seen that. Or the one that drives off the table that I used to have. It's called Clocky. And I used to, when I was having trouble waking up, before I started using Sleep Cycle, it would drive, it had wheels on it. I'll put a link to it in the show notes. And it would literally drive off the table and it would be beeping and you would actually have to get up, chase it, and then hit the button to turn it off. It's crazy. But some people need that.
Whether I should get this or if I get this, I'll break it on like the third morning. I'll crush it.
But no, that makes, I mean, so what's the fourth one then? So we've got the third one. Yeah.
Well, systems don't have to be rigid. Mm. A lot of people who come to me, they come in a mindset that I don't do systems. I hate systems. And that's the very reason they want to outsource system work to somebody else.
Mostly creative types, I would imagine, love to do this because they feel that create, you know, kind of being a creative, if it's too rigid, then it's going to stunt their creativity, right?
Absolutely. Yes. And in my mind, systems don't have to be rigid. They have to have built-in choice. You know, I mentioned that writing calendar block before, and I do that for myself too. So for example, if I have a writing block in my calendar and I know that Monday mornings are dedicated to writing, I can choose if I want to write a blog, if I want to write, you know, 10 tweets for my upcoming launch, if I want to do a product description, if I want to write curriculum, or essentially whatever mood I'm in. And the fact that the system has a built-in choice lowers resistance to actually use the system, which mm-hmm. means...
This is a total affirmation for the Now Your Method, because my system is, you know, the one I teach is very, mm-hmm. you know, it's very flexible, but yet durable. And I think that that's what you're saying, right? Is that there's that idea of it needs to be in place. It needs to be something you trust, but it can be yours. It doesn't have to be. I mean, I've written about why I left Getting Things Done behind because it seemed too rigid for me. And the interesting thing is that it probably for others, it's not too rigid at all. It's what they require and they can work within the boundaries of what Getting Things Done allows. I could not. So I think it's really interesting that the, you know, some of the parallels that we're discussing, you know, the fact that rigidity, again, very personal, very, you know, self-oriented, but also you give people permission, say, hey, look, you know, adopt a system, but make it yours. It does not have to be rigid. There could be some flexibility built into it, but just make sure you use it. I think that's the thing. The key is they have to use it, right?
Absolutely, because otherwise it's not there for its pretty eyes. It's when you don't use a system, and by using a system, I mean using it to your benefit, mm-hmm. it very quickly becomes a burden. Right. So you either use it or it's in your way. There's basically almost no in between. So might as well create a system or tweak it to a system that works for you, system right. that doesn't constrict you. By the way, I loved your discussion with Michael Dolan about getting things done. There was like a tension that made the episode very engaging.
Well, it's funny because with him, I had to make sure that, you know, that we, you know, that there was an understanding that, look, you know, I mean, I totally get the benefits of it, but he's one of the only people, if not the only person who gets to teach GTD that falls outside of the Getting Things Done organization. I'll link to that episode in the show notes as well. But yeah, there definitely was this idea of, look, and I haven't talked to David Allen since I've left Getting Things Done behind. So I think at some point it would be interesting for him and I to have a discussion as well, just to see, because I don't think that, and again, I don't think that there's anything wrong with the Getting Things Done methodology. Clearly, it's worked for hundreds of thousands of people or more. It worked for me for a time, but eventually, I mean, sometimes things evolve, right? So I definitely hear what you're saying about the idea of rigidity in systems and how to make sure that you own that system so that it doesn't feel as rigid. Now, what about the fourth thing?
So ideally, I believe a system should feel like a guilty pleasure. Doesn't always happen, but that's the ideal you should strive for. So for example, use the tools that you love. If you use office supplies, make sure they're really, really beautiful and pleasant to the touch. Enticing colors, funny sounds, and in general, create experience. So for example, if I have a client that needs to run team meetings because they have a small team and they need to communicate, and you know, you put a system in place for the agendas and the recurring meetings and the, you know, who's responsible for what and how the meetings go and who, you know, where do we keep the documents and so on. But that's not enough. That's kind of dry. What if you make sure you, you know, that meeting is when you get your perfect decadent mocha with whipped cream, because mm-hmm. that's what you love. What if you make a little tradition for the team meetings to tell a funny story from the last week, and every member of the team starts the meeting with something interesting or funny? Essentially, you create a pleasant, engaging, fun experience when you use that system. There is one example that is kind of controversial, but that's probably why I really want to give it here.
Sure.
There was an app, and it was called a Carrot, and I don't think it's in use anymore.
Carrot's still around. You can actually still get it. Yep, you can still get it. Yep.
I stopped advising people using it, especially people, you know, in my community, because on one hand, it's tremendously engaging. Mm-hmm. There is that experience. There is, you know, a snarky human, more or less, that interacts with you with every task that you do or you don't do. The reason I stopped advising using it is because many of the people I work with are people pleasers. I don't know if it's the nature of my particular work or it just happens so, but if you're a people pleaser and Carrot yells at you, essentially, you quickly deteriorate to doing very simple tasks just to get this confirmation, this validation. Oh, look, it's done.
Right.
Because it's so emotional.
Yeah, it's game. That's the problem I have with gamification in general. Well, I'll give you an example. So this past weekend, as we were recording, this was the long weekend. And whenever I go away for a vacation, I use Todoist for my primary task management, and I turn off Todoist Karma. And what Karma is, it's like the points that you get for completing tasks and so on and so forth. I turned it off because, you know, I wasn't going to be doing very much, you know, over the Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday. I normally don't have Karma on for Saturdays anyways, because that's my family day. But mm-hmm. on Friday, Sunday, and Monday, I normally do. And my karma is set to complete at least 10 tasks that are in Todoist. That's kind of my low, you know, threshold of, especially since I use Asana as well for team-based stuff. So what happens is that if you are getting close, so let's say I only have 8 tasks done, and let's use today as an example. I'm recording this on a Tuesday, and it's getting close to the end of the day. I will frantically search to complete don't do this anymore, but I would frantically search to complete those 2 tasks to hit that 10. So it's, again, it becomes about doing stuff just for the sake of doing stuff.
Exactly.
As opposed to doing the right stuff. So, and I think that while gamification has its benefits, I think you need to keep it in check and be realistic about it and understand, well, why am I, you know, there better be a high value in the high value tasks as opposed to just an arbitrary value for all of your tasks, because otherwise you're going to be doing things like, oh, look, I folded my laundry. There's a point for that. Oh, you know, I mean, some things are worth that. I mean, if your job is to work in a laundromat and that's what you're supposed to do, great. That's a high value task per se. But you know what I mean? I think that you're absolutely right. Okay. There is definitely gamification is both a blessing and a curse. Again, it's just how it's user error. Like with so many other things, it can all be attributed to user error.
Absolutely. And you know what? Remind me, I want to get back to this after I mm-hmm. Talk about the fifth point.
Yep.
For the good system, because it reminded me of something I recently wrote about.
Sure.
And, you know, we'll see if you have other questions. We don't have to talk about it. But
let's get into the fifth one and then we'll come back to that.
Okay. So the fifth is actually, in my mind, is the most important part of a working system. And if the listeners get one single thing from that episode, that should be it. A system works best if it has a built-in accountability.
Gotcha. So explain how that, now is that a built-in accountability to oneself, built-in accountability to others? Define that a little bit more.
Oh, it really depends. So, sorry. So for some people, they are very self-reliant and they have a high level of discipline and the accountability to oneself is all they need. These people, in my experience, are very few and far between, and I'm not one of them.
Mm.
So It could be something as basic as, you know, marking an X on your paper calendar for another day that you exercised. And it kind of like, you can see this, so you're kind of accountable. You can, you know, you can have this like karma to do is that you mentioned. So mm-hmm. there is measurement and there is implicit accountability in that. But for the really important things, frankly, the best way is still to have another person that you enter an accountability relationship with. Now, you coach people, so you know how that is. I believe there is a reason for a booming coaching industry. It's because people need accountability.
Right.
People have the information. People even know how. But in order to help them do stuff, they need, you know, they need guidance, but they really, really need accountability. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't have to be, you know, someone who you report to. It doesn't have to be your boss, but it has to be a relationship of a commitment where you feel uncomfortable to break it.
Right. No, that makes total sense. That makes absolutely, I mean, there's a reason why I have people that sign up for productivity as coaching. There's a reason why patrons at the Patreon level are contributing $50 at that level to get, you know, some limited slots with me every month. It's just, there is that. And it's funny, again, and this isn't the goal either, but I don't know if you find this, Marina, but I've met with clients before who, you know, I'll talk to them like, hey, did you complete your homework? Yeah, I just did it before we got on. They'll say, I'm like, so it becomes the, I need to do this before I meet with Mike next because he's going to call me on it. And that's not what you want. You want it to be happening measurably from the moment you last get off the call with them to the moment that you get on the call with them for the next call. But, you know, some people are sometimes circumstances force people into that situation. Sometimes people, I remember in high school, we all did this in college. Cramming for that exam at the last moment, right? You know, I mean, that's going to happen from time to time.
But all-nighters.
Right. So I think that there's some definite, the benefits of accountability are great. And here's the other thing is that anyone out there who's listening, if you don't think that Marina and I don't look for accountability elsewhere, you'd be wrong because I'm a member of masterminds groups and I've got a couple of them I'm a member of, and we each give each other, and I'm with some pretty high octane people in those groups, and we're all giving each other homework and challenges and accountability. So it doesn't stop with, you know, it doesn't stop when you get to a certain level, if you want to say that or whatever. I mean, everyone's going to need some accountability because it pushes you to be better. The book that I just finished reading last night, Ryan Holiday's Ego is the Enemy. It's so good. You know, he mentioned some stories in there that basically, you know, if his last book, The Obstacle is the Way, is about external barriers to success, then Ego is the Enemy is talking about the internal barriers and the internal, right. You know, so it's another great read. It's not terribly long either, and it's very really well researched. Ryan Holiday's books generally are. So for me, I think that fifth component, like you said, is so critical because you know, it will push you to take things to the next level, and you can see accelerated growth because you've got other people that aren't chiding you, they're cheering you on. And I think that's including yourself. I mean, the reason that I leave notes for I do my three absolutes the night before is because the person that finished that night up is the wisest person at that point in time. And I want that person to tell the person first thing in the morning who's just getting out of bed and is more likely to jump on Facebook or you know, read up on the latest Cincinnati Bengals news to say, hey, no, hold on a second. Here are the three things that you want to do. So you can, again, like you said, you can create accountability for yourself. It's a matter of making sure that you, again, this all comes back to, and this is what I love about systemization, is the system, if kept in check, will keep you in check.
I agree. And you know what? We talked before about system being flexible and not rigid. And I believe accountability is part of that.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
It's not a military relationship necessarily, right? You don't report to your military commander.
No.
Accountability could be flexible in terms of what you do, how people, you know, how people react to you.
The way you do it too is completely flexible. I mean, it could be what we're doing right now. It could be email. I mean, Matthew Kimberly did a 30-day program where he just emailed everybody every day. People got accountability emails from him every day for 30 days. That could be enough for you. It's all, again, it's all dependent. This is the personal component that we're talking about, right?
Yep, absolutely. A client of mine ran her programs and she had text check-ins with her clients, with her group, every weekday. She actually, that was too much at this point, but she did it because it was really effective.
Mm-hmm, totally. Totally. Let's get back to that thing we wanted to get to before we forgot, you know, about the do you remember what we were talking about? Okay,
so
go
you
ahead.
Mentioned the Todoist karma, mm-hmm, and how you turn it off.
Yep.
And it reminded me about there are times when your brain is just not in a creative mode. You can't bring yourself to do anything off consequence, like the very basic tasks. And I knew it happens to me, and I suspected it happened to other people. So I started asking around, and I was right. And I used to feel completely guilty and hopeless and beating myself up about this. You know, oh, here I am sitting here staring at the screen doing exactly nothing. I fold my laundry and I load my dishwasher, but that's about it. And you mentioned gamification and how it's, you know, it's a coin with two sides and it can be dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
And how certain tasks, you do them for the sake of tasks. Often in these like creative deserts, so to speak, this is a way of stalling. This is a way of not facing something you're afraid of.
Right.
I'm not going to sit down and write about, you know, something that really pains me. I'm going to clean my house instead. I'm going to, you know, run through my low priority folder because, oh, what if there's something interesting, and so on. So yes, you check off these tasks, but they actually, they impede you instead of giving you the actual karma, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
And on top of that, like what I realized is that track these patterns and know when your uncreative times, your like, whatever you call them, your plateaus, your creative deserts, when they're coming on, when they suddenly, you know, jump on you. And then you can both, you know, just be aware and stop beating yourself up and remember that these things are cyclical and you will be creative again in a certain while. So instead of, you know, miring yourself in guilt and wasting energy on that, you can just decide to rest, or you can plan for them if it's something that happens on a, you know, relatively regular basis.
Mm-hmm.
For example, if you know that you work out really, really, you know, if you have a really hard workout on Thursdays and on Fridays, you're still reeling from it and you can barely move an arm, maybe, you know, and maybe Fridays is not the best time for writing.
Right.
So you can plan for this stuff and you can plan the menial tasks, something that doesn't require a lot of soul or a lot of brain from you and still feel effective and get rid of that.
Well, Marina, this has been fantastic. Thank you so much for joining me this week on the show. And I know you've got some stuff that you want to share with my listeners before you wrap up. So take it away.
Thanks. So first of all, it was awesome being here. I really, really love talking to you. You're kind of like one of the people that I really admire for the work that you do. So it's a huge honor being on this podcast. I did put together a couple of resources for your listeners. If you go to my website and it's www.vision-framework.com /productivityist, there will be two ebooks that you could download. Obviously, they're free. One is the summary of the five principles of a good system that we were talking on the show. So you can download it and have it written in a pretty PDF. So you can refer to it if you want to. And there's another ebook about making a habit stick. So there are seven mindset shifts that help you make a habit stick. Because I believe that a huge part of using a system is actually creating good, healthy habits when it's easier to do something than to not do it. But it's very hard to develop a habit, and by developing, I don't mean just, you know, doing it once, twice, or 10 times. It making it a part of your life, making it integral to your behavior. So this ebook talks about 7 tricks, so to speak, that help you make a habit stick. And it's all on the same page. Go to my website. It's vision-framework.com/productivityist. Or you can come to my blog, which is right there. Just do /blog.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Marina, for joining me this week on the Productivityist podcast.
Thank you.
That wraps up this week's episode of the Productivityist podcast. You can find out more about Marina over at her website and all the other stuff she talks about. Of course, you can check that out in the show notes, whether you're looking at it on the blog or whether you're looking at your podcast application of choice, which, by the way, if you are using a podcast application to listen to this, I would love it if you leave a rating or review either in the application or maybe in iTunes, whatever you're using. That would be great. It helps more people find the show, helps me make more improvements to the show. Big thanks to John Polster for producing the show once again this week. He's been given some tighter timelines as of late because our backlog is not as great as it once was because of the thing that I'm working on right now, which is a book. So thanks to John for that. Thanks to all of you for joining me this week. And if you want to get more content, because it just doesn't end here, Patreon supporters of the Productivityist podcast get additional content each and every week. Head over to patreon.com/productivityist to learn all about that and see what you can get for as little as $1 a month, what you'll get for that. That's it for this week. Thanks again for joining me. Until next time, I'm your host, Mike Vardy, reminding you to stop guessing and start going.